This is the NBC Newsroom in San Francisco for a roundup of the latest developments in Tokyo Bay and on the shores of Japan, where our men are now going ashore. NBC's George Thomas Folster and Joe Hainline and NBC's and Newsweek's Robert Chaplin are standing by to give you on-the-spot reports. We switch you first to George Thomas Folster.
This is George Thomas Folster reporting from Japan. And this time I am really in Japan. I am standing on a concrete highway somewhere along the road to Yokohama. Now, I have made some notes on the side of this truck, which constitutes my script for this broadcast. Earlier in the day, we got a hold of this Japanese truck and the Japanese driver, mounted our portable transmitter in it, and we're on our way. Now, I notice that my first note here says Cliff. And that reminds me that all along this highway, since we left the naval base, we saw the usual Japanese caves. And remember, we're in the outskirts of a metropolitan area. One of these caves, at least one, I saw others lately, but the first one made its impression upon me. One of these caves had a huge, tunnel-like mouth. And it went so steep, so far in, that it reached the vanishing point, and you could not see to its end. And along both sides, it was lined with aeroplane motors. And I am just guessing, as we flew by it in our truck, that it was either a plane or an aeroplane repair plant underground. Now, my next note says, no Madam Butterfly. And that simply means that the few Japanese women that I have seen along this road in no way resemble Madam Butterfly. And my next note says, gasoline is the question. And it means that we must turn around now and head back to where we know we have at least a gasoline supply. And I think how lucky you are at home now the gasoline rationing isn't in effect anymore. Because probably, I say just probably, if we had enough gasoline, we would dare go on to Yokohama. And my next note I notice says noonday meal. And it is about 1 o'clock or just after 1 o'clock here in Japan on this highway. And there are a lot of people walking up and down, mostly men folk, a few women, and I am impressed at the number of people who are in uniform, people of all ages. At the first part of our trip down this road, we passed what might be naval cadets, young kids, knee-high to a grasshopper and probably not over 12 or 14 years old, laden down with household equipment, blankets, and what they call pillows piled high on their shoulders. Where they would take them, I do not know. And a whole family comes down the road. Mother and father, apparently mother and father and a little child, and both the little boy and the father are in uniform. Evidently, the kids are wearing uniforms to school here. And my next note says that I am to put this broadcast to Bob Chaplin on the Iowa. This is George Thomas Folster reporting from somewhere in Japan on the highway and switching into Robert Chaplin on the Iowa in Tokyo Bay.
This is Robert Chaplin of Newsweek and NBC reporting from aboard the battleship Iowa in Tokyo Bay. I have just come aboard this ship after landing with General MacArthur's airborne forces at Atsugi Airstrip below Tokyo a few hours ago, shortly after dawn. When I hit the ground in a C-54 transport, the second plane to arrive, I immediately commandeered a Japanese vehicle and driver and took off for Yokohama, 10 miles away on the rim of Tokyo Bay. I passed through the town unmolested, tried unsuccessfully because of damage done by the recent typhoon to make contact with Radio Tokyo through the Yokohama station, and then continued south down the coast until I reached advanced elements of the Marines, who landed at Yokosuka Naval Base the same time we landed inland by air this morning. Riding thus in a sedan that barely managed to weave along the road, I made the first contact between General MacArthur's forces, the 11th Airborne Division, and the Naval Landing Party here. Throughout the 15-mile trip through Yokohama, the Japanese bowed and saluted us on the way and were helpful whenever we stopped the car to ask them a question. With the help of a Japanese phrase book, I managed to elicit most of the information I wanted, where I could find the local Radio Tokyo outlet and how I could get to Yokosuka. When we left Atsugi early this morning and passed through a Japanese camp, guards momentarily stopped us, but a Jap permit pasted on the front of our car proved a fine passport. During the 10-mile drive through rich farmland, Japanese men and women stopped on the road and stared at us, and one or two smiled and waved. But by and large, it seemed to me that the most
smart thing was this.
They hardly seemed to realize the Americans were really in Japan. And as we passed by slowly in our old sedan, they would give us one glance and then look away, scarcely comprehending or even seeming to care. There was no talking or pointing among them. When we hit the outskirts of ruined Yokohama, it was the same thing. There was a deathly stillness in the air. A few streetcars were running and the passengers huddled together at the stop, not even talking to each other. There was an apathy about the whole scene that made Yokohama appear to be a ghost town, scarcely alive at all. High on the concrete station platforms was exactly the same way. The passengers stood silently and waited for the ancient two-car electric train to slide in and out, silently, and they boarded them without speaking. The few local police and naval guards along our route bowed stiffly or offered salutes, but there was no expression on their faces, only a certain look of inevitability. But no one bothered us. The inland part of Yokohama has been devastated by our bombing, but the portion along the shore and around the harbor is intact. We stopped at a police prefecture, a five-story red brick building, and with the aid of a guard who spoke English hauntingly, we explained to him where we wanted to go. Our driver obtained a box of crackers from him for our lunch, and we gave him some cigarettes and chocolate. He bowed half to the ground and thanked us as we drove off. As we moved slowly south along the shore toward Itasaka, we could see our vast fleet at anchor in the harbor. Finally, after being gone from the Atsugi ship 3 hours, we spied three Marines walking toward us down the road. They directed me to their battalion command post, from where I came aboard the Iowa by small boat. As a result of my experiences today, I can offer eyewitness evidence that both General MacArthur's airborne landing and the naval landing party here came out and were executed perfectly, and that the occupation of Japan is 100% success to date. This is Robert Chaplin of Newsweek and NBC aboard the Iowa. Here beside me is Joe Hainline.
I've just returned from witnessing the historical ceremony in which Yokosuka Naval Base was turned over from the Japanese to the American Navy. In brief, concise, 9-minute exchange of words, the transfer was completed beneath the backdrop of huge hoists and cranes and the ruined steel plants nearby. Taking part was the Naval Base Commandant Vice Admiral Michitoro Tozuka and, for the Americans, Rear Admiral Robert D. Kearney, representing Admiral Halsey. Standing stiffly at attention to the left of Admiral Kearney was Rear Admiral Oscar C. Badger in overall command of the landing operation for the Navy. Both admirals aboard the San Diego piled up at the dock in the Yokosuka Naval Base shortly before 10 o'clock this morning. Looking down from the deck of the cruiser, I could see great numbers of Marines milling back and forth on the berthing space there, mingling with Japanese soldiers and civilians. There were two long lines drawn up at attention, down which the two conquered admirals must pass to turn over custody of the naval yard. Small, white-gloved, bowing Admiral Tozuka was accompanied by his aide. He came up before Badger and Kearney, saluted stiffly, self-consciously, and stood at attention. Then, after a brief exchange of words through an interpreter, Tozuka took from his aide a white envelope which he handed to Admiral Badger. A few more words were exchanged, and the entire party started out on an inspection tour of the yard. Present were great numbers of correspondents, including representatives of the Japanese press. One little Jap photographer tried to sneak through the lines of Marines for a special picture. He was taken by the scuff of the neck and hustled unceremoniously to the sidelines by a burly Marine sergeant. The Jap officers did not carry swords. They had been removed before they approached for the ceremony. This is Joe Hainline, NBC war correspondent, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company newsroom in San Francisco.
This broadcast by Robert Chaplin of Newsweek and NBC, and NBC's George Thomas Folster and Joe Hainline, came to you from Japan by way of the NBC newsroom in San Francisco. Keep tuned to your NBC station for the later news.